Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Graham Holm here, aka the original Money Mentor, with the always correct, always accurate, and very entertaining realist, Dr. Andrew Wilson. How are you, Doc?
Yeah, I'm good, Graham. Here we are. We say every week we're moving through the year. Isn't that crazy? Third week in January, we've got Australia Day coming up this weekend, public long weekend. It's going to be pretty hot around the country, hot in Sydney. Hot in Brisbane, hot on the Gold Coast. So I guess that's what we want for the long weekend, crowded beaches and lots of sun, but maybe not the crowded beaches.
I just got to warn everyone, Doc, I got you a little bit wound up just as we were coming on air there with a few media articles and clickbait headlines. So people might be in for a bit of a roasting today. Hey, Doc, we'll see how we go.
Well, we'll see how we go, Graham, but it's all about interest rates again. And you know, we certainly, as we consistently say, we have more or less a desperate media out there that are quite happy to promote outrageous, nonsensical headlines just to get a little bit of traction, even though those headlines go 180 degrees, usually over a month or even shorter. So if you're making property decisions, just be very, very careful about who you listen to, and particularly those outrageous predictions, which we've seen all been completely nonsensical over really the past 5 or 6 years, particularly in regards to property prices. So I guess we should move on. We've got a big show as usual. Yep. I guess we'll get the slides up. There they are.
And for those of you that do tune in the car or wherever you get your podcast action from, please know that there are slides for everything that Doc and I talk about every week on my Money Mentor YouTube channel. So that is in the show link. You can see that. You can see the link there. You can go and watch all of the slides and mine and Doc's beautiful faces as we're having a chat. So over to you, Doc.
Yeah, thanks, Graham. And this is the latest insights into the housing market, property markets, and the economy generally from my housing market. We're moving along. We'll start getting more data, of course, as the year progresses. Next week, we're going to have the first house price data for the year. That will be the January quarter results. And my housing market, as usual, will be the first with the latest data on the housing market in relation to house prices. This week, Graham, we're going to look at the latest unemployment data from the ABS, which was released last week. That's the December 2023 data. That's the first lot of data that we do get released in the month in terms of those economic insights is the unemployment data, first one to come out. We're also going to have a quick and an interesting look, I think, Graham, at the top 2023 investment returns for the capital cities last year. Mm. So we're going to have a look at rental yields and capital growth and put them all together for total investment returns. And
I like it.
And we're also going to have a cheeky quick look at the at house price growth versus the share market. So hang on to your hat.
That might be a bit cheeky, Doc. That might upset a few people if we come forward with some facts and some data.
Well, it is just facts, Graham, but we'll talk about that shortly. And just as a bit of a bonus today, we're going to have a look at the top auction regions and the top auction suburbs for the spring selling season last year. So this will give you some sign of, and this will be for Melbourne and Sydney because they're the big auction markets. Going forward, we might look at Brisbane and Adelaide, which are other, and Canberra, other significant auction markets for their top suburb and regional reports. But we'll look at the big markets today, the top results for suburbs and regions over the spring selling season last year. So I'll give you a bit of an insight to where the hotspots are in the Sydney and Melbourne market in relation to auction results. So firstly, Graham, labour market, the December results still strong despite those higher rates, but we are starting to see just an easing in the underlying trend for the unemployment rate, Graham. So the jobless unemployment rate remained a steady at 3.9%, but it is tracking higher now than those lows that we had earlier in 2023. Of course, we had a consistent period where the unemployment rate was 3.5%, so we have ticked up a little from that. Not so sure it's the interest rate issue that's creating that higher unemployment rate. I think it's more about migration, to be quite honest, and also a lower participation rate. But we did see jobs actually fall After a number of months of jobs increasing and increasing strongly, we saw the number of jobs actually decrease. So a little bit of a shift there in the, I guess it's a rebalancing following that very strong growth to get some jobs falling over, to get jobs falling over December. And of course, we just want to mention that we've had some issues, which the ABS concede in the seasonal adjustment models that the ABS use for their economic data. And that's as a result of what happened during COVID, where all bets were off because strong months became weak months and weak months became strong months. So those the methodology for those seasonal adjustment models just was out of skew. So it's getting back to a normal process now, but we just have to take that with a bit of a grain of salt. But nonetheless, jobs decreased by 65,000. But as I mentioned, that followed very, very strong growth over previous months. The unemployed number was actually lower by 1,000, just down by 1,000, the number of unemployed. That had risen over the last the months previous to that, Graham. So a little bit of balancing out from strong declines in unemployed to a rise. Again, we've got to look at the methodology. But the interesting thing was the participation rate was down. We would have probably had a higher unemployment rate if the participation rate had have remained at the record high that we had the previous month. So that means there were fewer people engaged in the workforce. So overall, so we would likely have had a higher unemployment rate. When we look at the state results, New South Wales was the lowest jobless. And as I said before, I think what we're seeing now is the impact of migration on, because, you know, Graham, we've had 500,000 come into the country over the past year. Yep. Of course, they have to look for work. It's been remarkable that given, and this isn't just permanents looking for work, it's students and maybe some longer-term travellers that are coming in, they look for work. So that's what's pushed up the unemployment rate, not surprisingly, and it's taken some time for that to happen. But still, the unemployment rate is very, very low. We have to go back to the early 70s to see these types of numbers, and, of course, it was a different economy back in the early 70s, basically single-income families. But nonetheless, just an easing in the unemployment rate. Maybe some good news there for the Reserve Bank. They can start to think, okay, well, maybe higher interest rates are finally working. So I don't think, well, that's one factor which I think will influence their decision in 2 weeks' time. But of course, next week we will discuss the prospect for the meeting for interest rates going forward. So as I mentioned, that trend has certainly just started to tick up a little bit over recent months, Graham, the unemployment trend, but it's still significantly lower than anything we've seen since the 1970s. And it's been very, very consistent in those threes. But as I said, it might have got over four if we had have had a higher or a record participation rate again, but we shouldn't be surprised. High migration and the impact gradually of higher interest rates, which of course is the plan. And this is a positive for the Reserve Bank's interest rate decision, because the fewer people with jobs, the less money they have to spend, so the less drive we have for inflation. And of course, this is the plan to have higher unemployment and just to quell, particularly consumer activity as a result of that, and continue to put downward pressure on inflation. The top states, Graham, over December for the unemployment rate was New South Wales. We know that Sydney market's pretty strong. I think part of the reason is the strength of the New South Wales economy. Unemployment rate, the lowest of all the states, 3.4%. The highest there was Queensland at 4.4%. I think what's interesting, Graham, and this is obviously reflects the trend data that we were just discussing, is that unemployment rates are now higher than where they were a year ago, everywhere except Adelaide. Which is lower, but Adelaide was coming from a 4% result, the highest result a year ago, and it's drifted down to 3.8%. But I think that just shows that, you know, unemployment rates are now starting to rise from those remarkably historically low levels that we've seen over the past year. So that's the unemployment rates. And, you know, I think that's part of the decision-making positives for, you know, where interest rates will go when the Reserve Bank meets in February.
Just to give some context, Doc, where should people start to be concerned? What's a trigger in the unemployment rate? What's the number, the range? for the people at home that have no idea what it means?
Well, I think, Graham, when we look at the chart that pre-COVID, you know, we were tracking at 5%, and the government was worried, or the Reserve Bank was worried when we were at the 5%, that, you know, that the economy was stalling. We were sort of stuck around 5%. And that's why we were cutting interest rates then. Can you believe it? It was sort of the complete opposite to what we have now.
And then you go back to coming out of the GFC, or in the GFC, it was like 4%, right? Four, mid-fours, late-fours.
That's right. So I think that we'd have to be looking at a 5% number to start with before there was any talk of needing to stimulate the economy. You know, four is very, very low, Graham. Three is extraordinarily low. And so I think we'd start be consistently pushing into the fives before the Reserve Bank would even consider stimulating the economy with higher interest rates, with lower interest rates. And, of course, the jeopardy with cutting interest rates, and there's a lot of nonsense, absolute nonsense that's being spoken about the prospects of cutting interest rates, not just here but in the US. And those predictions are bouncing all over the place. And once again, it's just clickbait. It's just desperate media trying to get attention by predicting outrageous outcomes. The Reserve Bank would be crazy in the foreseeable future to be cutting interest rates because it would only likely put upward pressure on inflation, you know, going forward. And we're already a percent below where the US is on our interest rates anyway. So, you know, going forward, I think that we'll discuss this next week, Graham, the prospect for interest rates. But I think, you know, those that are making investment decisions and are basing it on some of the nonsense that we're reading from the usual suspects of doom and gloom, that interest rates are going to be cut, you know, or boom and doom, you know, they should really be a little bit more circumspect about the information resources they use, particularly stay away from those terrible tabloid media opportunities. Okay, so we're going to look at something a little different today, Graham. We're going to look at investment returns. Speaking of interest rates, and this is for last year. So let's have a look at the gross investment yields. Now, this what this covers is the gross yields. So we're not, and these are rental yields. So this is the return from rent on the median price of each of the capital city markets. So it's not a net return. It's just the gross return, which is the rent versus the median price. And we can see there for houses that Perth is the number one performer with last year, with a gross investment yield of 3.81%, down to Sydney as the underperformer with 2.49%. When we look at units, typically units give us a higher return because the differential between rents and houses is between rents and prices in units is different between rents and prices in houses. So Perth, big year for Perth. We know that not just for prices for houses and units, but also rents for units. Particularly. So Perth yields are now tracking over 7%. Similarly, Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney, the underperformers there, but still over 5% yields for units in Melbourne and Sydney, Graham, which does reflect that very strong growth in the unit market, in unit rents, which have certainly outstripped the growth in unit prices, which were, even though they did increase generally, particularly Melbourne and Sydney, they weren't as strong as house prices. So that gives us a higher yield. For unit investments, investment yields, gross investment yields compared to houses, which didn't have a stronger rental growth but had stronger prices growth than units, if you understand what I'm saying. So certainly these are good returns for property investors in terms of gross returns going forward. But when we put it all together for total returns, Graham, hang on to your hat here. So when we add those yields, right, so that's the return you get on your on your rent, according to the value of your property, the notional value now of your property, and you add that to the capital growth last year, right? So we add capital growth, so you've got your capital growth over the year and you've got your investment yield. Well, we put that all together. Look at Perth, Graham. Investment returns there at 20%. That's capital growth and yields, with Melbourne the underperformer up by 5.94% because we know that Melbourne had a quieter year last year. But those markets of Perth and Brisbane are particularly strong going forward. And as when we look back at those unit yields, Graham, we always say this, that your yields are a very good forward indicator of capital growth. And when they see yield, they are, and we've proven that, mate, Canberra for sure.
And we Adelaide, Canberra, Adelaide, Southeast, Queen, Doc, three years ago, you and I were saying Southeast Queensland is terribly undervalued. And
That was because of high yield.
The values had to increase, and we were right.
And they were right. And they did increase. And I think we're seeing, when we did look at that that previous slide in terms of investment yields, we saw Perth and Brisbane are over 7% with their investment yields for units. I think that's, again, that's the rallying call for higher prices growth. So I'm saying that I think Perth and Brisbane yields will fall, but I think they will fall because prices are going to rise. Now, we've always seen strong growth recently in Perth and Brisbane unit prices. I think that will continue, even though Perth is a smaller market. But the offset to all this, Graeme, is we're still seeing very strong rent growth for units in both. So that's sort of offsetting that. So those yields may stay high, even though capital growth will still see more capital growth because of higher rents.
And if my yield drops from 7 to 5, Doc, because I've gone up $100,000 in capital growth, I don't think I'm going to complain.
No, but it might be the best of both worlds. You might see your yield holding up because your rent's gone up another 20%, right?
Yeah.
Which it went up last year. So I think this data is very interesting. And as we'll discuss later, the new My Housing Market Infinity app will start to show yields. So you'll have an indication on a suburb basis of where the top yielding suburbs are in Australia, which will again give you an insight into the real hotspots based on real data modelling. So as I said, total gross returns, 19% in Perth last year, capital growth and yields. And for Adelaide, 23% increase for unit total returns, that's capital growth and yield. So some big numbers there. Once again, it shows how strong the property market was last year. Double whammy positives, double whammy, strong price growth, 10% plus in most of the major capitals, all except Melbourne. And we had 10% increase in rents plus. And for units, we had most of the major capitals increased by 20% in their rents, Graeme. So good news there for property owners, property investors in terms of the returns last year. And we always should mention that there's plenty of incentives for property investment. I'm not spruiking this. This is the reality. We have capital gains discounts for property investors. We have tax depreciation. And, of course, we have negative gearing, all as a positive. And as we saw last week, Graeme, the latest home loan data continues to show increased investment opportunities in investment lending. So that investment market is obviously keen to take advantage of very strong conditions currently in the property market going forward. As I said, I think that will continue. Certainly not prices growth as strong this year as last year, which was a catch-up market. But I think those smaller capital city markets, by that I mean the smaller major capital city markets, Adelaide, Brisbane and Perth, are still primed, Graeme, maybe, to get double-figure growth again this year. And those yields are sort of pointing us towards that. And I'm going to be a little bit cheeky, Graeme. We've spoken about investment yields. So let's just be a little bit cheeky out there. Hang on to your hat, right? There'll be some fuming out there, I guess, but let's have a comparison with property returns and the share market. So what we're going to do is look at the value of capital growth in the major capitals versus the growth in the share market. Now, we're going to use, it depends really, these models, you can take them anywhere, you know, really. But what we're going to do is we're going to use the end of 2007 as our benchmark. Now, why would we use that, Graeme? Well, I think that's a good chance, a good sort of starting point, because it was the year before the GFC. It was the peak of the mining boom. We had a very, very strong economy. Housing markets were rising. The share market had surged to record levels. It was very high at the end of 2007. So I think that's a good starting point. So you can start wherever you like, but I think I've given a good argument why we should start there, don't you?
Absolutely.
So we'll start there. But look at these results. Since 2007, the share market has increased by, well, I don't want to be ironic here, but by a spectacular 14.2%. Over that 14.2%. Oh, please. We look at Sydney house prices. They're up by 168% over that period. Melbourne house prices, 135%. Brisbane up 96.7%, Adelaide up 99.2%, Perth up 47%. Of course, we know Perth had a very low period. So, mate, look at the comparison. And it's not just those that, I guess, have bought shares.
Well, if we go into this, one, we never see an article about the stock market crashing. You only see articles about the housing market crashing, which is never accurate. Two, go to a bank, Doc, and say, hey, I've got 100 grand. I'm going to buy shares in your bank. Can I leverage that? Like, can I, I can go get, I've got 100 grand and the bank goes, I'll give you 900, Graham. And now you can get your 14%, 6% return on $1 million asset value compounding. But if I go into the bank, Doc, and go, I've got 100 grand, I want to buy shares in the bank, what do you think the bank's going to tell me?
See you later. I think, you know, seriously. But this is the point, which is a great comparison in the, you know, I guess the risk of various of these asset classes is that a bank is quite happy to lend up to 80%, you know, on a home, right? You know, generally that's the 80-20%. You've got to put in 20% deposit. They'll lend you 80%, and they'll also give you the lowest interest rate in the country on any asset borrowing, right? So they'll give you a low interest rate, relatively low interest rate, and they'll let you borrow 80% of the value of that property. Now, you go to a bank and say, look, I've got $1 million worth of shares here. Can you lend me $800,000, please? And I'll put in $200,000. Can you do that and give me a nice low interest rate? And they'll say, you know, security. Right. I think, you know, this is another point of the risk elements involved, you know. And of course, there are options to borrow against shares, but certainly not from a bank and not with those very strong returns, those very strong lending conditions, such as a low interest rate and a high, LVR, loan to valuation ratio. So I think that says it all, not just the, and that's why when you look at the growth in the shares compared, that's got to be one of the reasons why it's, you know, that property is regarded as a much stronger investment, particularly for those who are prepared to lend on it, such as our big banks. You know, look at that, Graham.
You know, it'd be an interesting comparison, Doc, as well. When the market has corrected in real estate, i.e. 5.5% a few years ago, but then if you look at the corrections that occur in the stock market and what the difference of that is, because a 5.5% correction to then recover, but when the market crashes, that's when you're coming from that lower base, it's a very different, anyway, well, you and I get it.
We'll do it, Graham. We'll do it.
Do you want to do it? Should we do it?
We'll do it. I'll do it. So let's look forward to that.
Let's get a graph going, Doc, of the property market like you've done here since then. Let's look at the stocks and let's see what the disparity is of the corrections and crap. Because then, Doc, if the market drops 50% in stocks, I'm just making up a number, you're coming from a very low base to get back to where you were.
Yeah, again, it's all about the security of property. And, you know, it's a different asset. And what I think's interesting, Graham, and we should point out, is that most Australians, of course, have superannuation, those that are working, and those that have retired. And superannuation returns are really based, you know, fundamentally on returns in the share market. And they reflect what's happened with the All Ords. So if you've had super, you know, since, and of course this isn't compounding, but if you've had super since 2007 as an example, and people out there know what's happened with their super over recent years, how it's just gone nowhere.
Well, if you look at that, Doc, if your financial planner had a self-managed super fund for you and they put half your money into the market and half your money into property in 2007, half your money's done 14%. And if you had a unit in Sydney, it's grown 167%.
That's right. So, you know, there you go. And again, these are the facts, Graham. There's nothing, you know, whatever. And of course, you can, as I said, you can take these measures and comparisons at any particular time, I guess, to suit your argument per se. But I think we've said that I think that's a good starting point, 2007, for the reasons I explained. But that's a huge disparity going forward, Graham. But as you said, let's look at the volatility. of the chain.
Let's do that.
We'll do that, and I think will reinforce again the security of property going forward. So I've been a bit naughty today, but we've given a bit of a lift up there for property investors. And hey, even the government's starting to say that perhaps the solution to our rent crisis is to get more investors, private sector investors, into the market, and stop with the nonsense of blaming we've got a lot of pinheads out there, Graham, who are blaming migration for the rental crisis. And yet, even when we had borders that were just reopening, we saw rents going through the roof. So, this is a systemic problem that's been occurring through a significant lack of supply rather than the changes in demand we've got through migration. But, once again, it's just spruiker bait that we get from particularly the tabloid media to justify other products that people are trying to sell. So let's move on.
I'm pumped next week. I want to see that, Doc. I cannot wait to see those disparities and track it.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting. So let's have a look just to finish off, Graham. We usually have the auction results, but the auction market doesn't start for another week or so. So we'll just go back and look at the spring selling season. Of course, that covers September through to December. So it's not the spring season, it's the spring selling season, which is the last 4 months of the year traditionally. So let's have a look at we know that those auction clearance rates are a good forward indicator of house price growth. That's why we promote auction results every weekend, because it does tell us what's happening in the housing market, on an underlying basis. And we know that when we look at Sydney prices versus clearance rates and Melbourne prices versus clearance rates. So these are the top Sydney results in terms of the clearance rates for regions, Graham. So the Inner West, and they're very close, the Sydney regional clearance rates for the spring selling season. The Inner West was the top result there. Not far behind at the bottom was the Northwest at 70.7%. Central Coast, same result as the Inner West, Canterbury, Bankstown, the South, then the City and East, but very close results there from what was an overall quite a strong auction market in Sydney last year. Graham, we know we were up in the 80s, into the 80s in May and June. It eased off, as it typically does, affordability constraints, more stock, but we ended the year pretty close to 70% anyway, but that just shows you most regions recorded very similar results over the spring selling season, which just showed you generally that the Sydney market was performing at an even rate in terms of the location results. So let's have a look at the top suburbs. Firstly, for auction numbers, Graham, and Mosman was the top suburb for auctions over the spring selling season with 134 results. Of course, there's a lot of units in auction, so this covers units and houses. Lane Cove, number 2, 105. Maroubra, number 3, 101. Randwick, 95. And look, a lot of those, obviously, higher-priced inner-city suburbs did the best in terms of the number of auctions, and that's what we see, that auctions typically favour those inner-city areas or middle-ring suburbs in Sydney and Melbourne where there's more competition for property. These were the top suburbs, Graham, for clearance rates. Now, what we've done is we've filtered this for a minimum of 20 sales. So we've got to take a little bit of volatility out of this. So we want to get some robust results. So this is a minimum of 20 results. Lilyfield in the Inner West, again, showing the strength of the Inner West, was the top clearance rate, 92.6% clearance rate in Lilyfield, Graham. So just about everything sold. Bondi, no surprise, very strong there, 90.3%. Coogee, 88.7%, Cameray, 88.6%, Granville out in the west, which was an interesting result there for Granville, Graham, 87.5%. And Seven Hills also out in the west was in the top results there. So all well over 80% clearance rates, Graham. Again, mainly inner suburban suburbs, but some exceptions there with Granville and Seven Hills producing some very good results for the sellers in auction. So let's have a look at Melbourne. As usual, Melbourne's outer east had the top clearance rate, 75.3%. That's very strong in what was certainly a weaker market compared to Sydney and Melbourne last year. 75.3% in the outer east just continues to be a hotspot in Melbourne, Graham. the Outer East, and again, another big year for the Outer East. Interesting, the underperformer there was the Inner City, which is a prestige area in Melbourne, the Inner City, with 66.5%. But a lot of that are units, and there's a lot of lower-priced units in the Inner City area in Melbourne. We're talking suburbs, you know, such as Richmond, Collingwood, Abbotsford, which have a lot of now have a lot of sub unit developments in those areas, which have dragged that clearance rate down and the numbers up. But certainly a bit of a surprise with the Inner City there being the underperformer. So let's have a look at the top auction suburbs in Melbourne. Reservoir out there in the northeast always has lots of auctions. Very strong auction culture in Reservoir. 198 auctions. East Bentley, 143 auctions. Very popular suburb in Melbourne's southeast, or inner south, southeast Bentley. And Richmond, as we mentioned, in the inner city, 141 auctions. But a lot of that was were unit auctions, Graham. The underperform, well, the number 10 was not an underperformer, but number 10 on the top 10 was Camberwell, which, of course, is a prestige inner suburb in Melbourne's east, 77.9% from 104 auctions. Lots of auctions there in Camberwell. Again, there are plenty of units in Camberwell as well. So let's have a look at the top suburbs in Melbourne for the spring selling season. Oakley South, Graham, very interesting. And that's sort of inner south, yeah, but it's sort of southeast. It's the gentrification of the southeast in Melbourne, Graham. People have been pushed out of the inner east and have moved across to the inner south, particularly the eastern part of the inner south. And Oakley South, big performer last year with 96% clearance rate. Carlton North, another inner city suburb, 90% clearance rate. Ashwood, the outer east, as we mentioned before, the outer east, very strong, 90% clearance rate. So those three suburbs, Ashwood, Carlton North and Oakley South, all above 90%. But again, the outer east sort of dominates those suburbs. Well, not dominates, but has a number of suburbs, Blackburn North and Heathmont, which have had good results in terms of the top 10 clearance rate. So there's some interesting data, Graham, showing us where the hotspots are in Melbourne and Sydney. I think there's some interest there for those looking for investment opportunities in terms of demand. And as we said at the beginning, auction results are a very good forward indicator of what's happening generally in the marketplace. Absolutely. So we'll finish off, Graham, with our usual ad for the My Housing Market Infinity app. We've got on the slide here the QR code, which if you take a picture of that, you'll get a link to the My Housing Market Infinity app. You have to go through Infinity to get the password. Hello, we'll say it again. You have to go through Infinity to get the password for the app, but it's a great little app. It tells you what asking prices and asking rents are currently in all the capitals, sorry, in all the suburbs in Australia, as long as they've got some data. They're on the app, and you can filter it for house or rent or prices or rent. So you can also filter it for the regionals or the capital city, the suburbs, of course, in each of those, either the region or the capital city. The type of property, you can filter it for a house, a unit or a townhouse. And also, Graham, you can filter it for the number of beds as well. So, hey, this is very precise. And we've got a screenshot there of the of Blackburn as an example. Of our app, and we can see there that the data for Blackburn has a median price of 1.23 million, a low of 850, a high of 1.5, and it shows you the number of listings. There's currently 12 listings there, so a great little app for current asking prices, and we update that daily, Graham, so you can get all the latest information. So it's a handy little guide to understand what vendors are asking for their properties in each of the capital cities, how many properties are for sale, what the median price is, and also the high and the low price, and also gives you the same data for rents as well, median rent, high and low rent, number of rental properties in each of those suburbs. And you can filter it for all those particular factors, which gives you a much more precise insight into the housing market. So just a little guide you can put on your phone or on your computer just to understand what's happening in the housing market exclusively to Infinity and My Housing Market. And as we said, we're working on a great new updated app, which will also give us the yields for those suburbs and show us where the top yielding suburbs are in Australia as well. So it doesn't get any better than that. Next week, Graham, we will have the January 2024 house and unit prices, the first of all the price data to come out. So we'll be the first to tell us what's happened over January, January quarter. We'll also show how the house price cycle is tracking. So where are the capital cities on the cycle currently, given those January results? We also have the latest retail sales, which will be important for the Reserve Bank's decision making. We'll also look at the top capital city economies in terms of the unemployment rates, and we'll discuss at some length the interest rate decision that will be made the following week from the Reserve Bank. So we'll talk a lot about interest rates. We'll talk about the prospect of interest rates for 2024, particularly given all the chat that's going on, the hype that's going on regarding the prospect for interest rate cuts, which is just cheap headlines, in my opinion. But we'll talk about that in some depth next week, Graeme. So been a big show today, lots to talk about. And I look forward to chatting again next week, and particularly given we'll show those results for the share market's volatility.
That's all I'm interested in next week, Doc. That's the whole show. We're going to rip it apart. No, look forward to it, Doc. And thank you, as always, for your insight and wisdom. And we will see you all next week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you, Graeme. Look forward to next week, getting out of the heat.
Absolutely. See you there.
See you, mate.